In a surprise move, the Reserve Bank cut interest rates today. The repo rate will go down by 25 basis points to 6.25% effective from Friday, the 17th of January, that is tomorrow. That means the prime rate, the rate at which commercial banks charge their customers, will go down to 9.75%. Theoretically, this should be good for consumers and businesses as they'll be able to borrow funds at a lower rate, hopefully to invest in productive investments like property, business and the like, and ideally not on consumption. Unsurprisingly, the bank downwardly revised the growth expectation for 2019 as a whole and for 2020. Well, to unpack the latest decision for us, I'm joined in studio by Annabelle Bishop. She's chief economist at Investec. Thanks very much, Annabelle, for joining us.
Pleasure.
So before the MPC's announcement, you were quoted as saying that a rate cut was unlikely in the absence of structural reforms. And many of your peers were of the same view, but the bank clearly surprised us. When you look into the detail of the statement, what had changed to make the move, do you think?
Yes, what a lovely surprise. I think everyone was quite shocked, really. You know, even people were hoping for a cut. I think the reality is it's probably the fact that the growth has just become so dire in South Africa. That's probably what changed their view. You know, if you actually have a look at where inflation's sitting at 3.6%. GDP last year, well, the Reserve Bank looks at 0.4.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe even 0.2. I mean, there's not much between the two of them. And very much, you know, due to load shedding. And I think, you know, the bottom line is confidence is still very depressed. It's been depressed for a long time, not just business, but consumer confidence as well. And it looks like the Reserve Bank is actually becoming more aware of economic growth as part of its policy setting. You know, sure, the 3.6% inflation doesn't matter, because they always say apparently that, you know, they look 18 months out, and of course, you know, next year inflation is about 4.5%. This year inflation about 4.5%, and next year obviously closer to 5%. But they did see some downward revisions in inflation. So I think this is a very welcome turnaround in the Reserve Bank's attitude. You know, why we said that it's probably unlikely we're going to see cuts unless we see some structural reforms is because that's what they've always told us in the past. And now suddenly we have a new message today.
Yeah, interesting. So how much of an impact can we expect the latest downward interest rate adjustment to have on consumers, especially as we hear that on average people's debt levels did tick up during last year?
Well, you know, every little bit helps, but the reality is, you know, 0.25% is not very much in the great scheme of things. Mm. It helps when people use that saving. You know, if you paid X amount each month and now you're paying slightly less, if you continue paying what you were paying before, it helps to reduce your debt quicker. And, you know, that's always helpful because it's cumulative, because it actually really adds up in the longer term. It does make a material difference. Perhaps, you know, from a consumer confidence point of view, you might have a little bit of relaxation there. You know, consumers hoping for better times, particularly as a Reserve Bank signaled the possibility of further interest rate cuts. But obviously, it very much depends on the Moody's credit rating decision and whether they, you know, deem our budget to be sufficient in terms of expenditure cuts. Mm. And, you know, that will tell us what's likely to happen the rest of this year. Unlikely we get an interest rate cut in March anyway, because the Reserve Bank doesn't tend to cut at every successive meeting or even hike at every successive meeting. But of course, you know, seeing what happens in Moody's maybe brings up the possibility of May or July, if we don't obviously see any major negatives on the global front. Mm. Good news, the signing of the US-China trade deal is in the first phase.
Absolutely. So in terms of their growth outlook, the bank downwardly adjusted 2019 growth to 0.4% as opposed to 0.5% before. But quite interestingly, they've downwardly revised growth for this year, 2020, to 1.2%, which is still above the World Bank's estimate of 0.9%. They still see us as a sub 1% growth economy, but the Reserve Bank not. Do you think that's optimism? You know, a little bit of patriotic optimism playing a role there.
You know, I mean, the World Bank having it at 0.9, we put out 0.8 as well. And so very close to the World Bank. And I suppose, you know, perhaps the World Bank and ourselves are very worried about what happens going forward this year, next year, with Eskom. Eskom has signaled that it's going to remain constrained from an electricity supply point of view, and that we will therefore have further load shedding both this year and next year. And of course as well, you know, the reality is our power stations in South Africa are aging.
Yes.
You know, very old, and they're going to become less productive, not more productive.
Yes.
They're running well beyond the age limit of what they should have actually been done in many cases. So the reality is we might not see that growth rate of above 1% this year, and that's a real risk for us. Yes, you know, the global economy is now likely to see possibly 0.3% more growth than it was expected to see before this first phase trade deal signing of the United States and China. But of course, you know, looking forwards for ourselves, better global growth does assist us, but of course, it would really help us if we didn't cut off our productive capacity, which is electricity supply.
Absolutely.
At times, we must add, the president says only at times, not all the time. That's very important.
But now you're reminding me as well that, you know, electricity is a big factor, not just about its supply, but its cost. And of course, if Eskom is to win its recent urgent application that it had, I think, yesterday in the court, basically asking NERSA to basically allow it to have the 69 billion rand that it had deducted, that means that we're going to be paying increases of 16% come the end of March, as opposed to 8%. And of course, that will then impact on inflation.
Absolutely. And maybe the Reserve Bank squeezed in an interest rate cut before then. But, you know, I mean, the reality is we have incredibly low electricity costs on a global comparison. And, you know, so low indeed that obviously it's part of the reason why we are in the financial mess, not the whole reason. We've heard about state capture, we've heard about all the problems with the bills, and of course, you know, many other issues as well. But the big problem for us really is that, you know, the world is migrating to renewable energy, as we well know, the face of climate change, the terrible things that have happened in Australia, all of these issues. And we're a big coal producing electricity nation, a big electricity nation through coal production. Yeah. Of course, you know, the big concern really for us is, you know, moving into the renewable energy space, it does cost a bit more. And, you know, we need to get up to global issues, to global costs. And obviously, you know, what's happening in terms of global issues of climate change. And, you know, not moving in that direction is very problematic for us. We're already seeing climate change impacts in the Cape in terms of drought. So, you know, the reality is we probably are going to have high electricity costs. Sadly, people see it as having to pay for corruption. They say the corruption happened at Eskom. Now we are paying the cost through high electricity. And, you know, that's a real worry. You know, the money that had leached out the system could have been used so productively. We could have had a much faster economic growth rate now. So yes, you know, I think high electricity costs are on the cards.
So the question some may be asking is, might the Reserve Bank possibly have to reverse today's decision if the rand flares up, implying inflation in the event that Moody's does the worst and downgrades the country to the country's sovereign credit rating to junk?
Well, you know, if the rand really does flare up, you know, a substantial rand appreciation, moving to 16, 17 rand to the US dollar, and it persists. And, you know, if we get high oil prices and we start getting those big over 1 rand increases in the petrol price, and that really does push through higher inflation, it rolls us forward into a higher base going into next year, the year they target. And that type of scenario probably would see interest rate hikes. The Reserve Bank themselves, a couple of years ago, estimated that, you know, a downgrade from Moody's could see even a 100 basis point elevation in money market interest rates, with the repo obviously tending to follow what occurs in money market rates. And, you know, this is a big concern for us. And of course, you know, that also brings in financial market volatility as well. When you're speculative grade, you get a lot more volatility in your indicators. It doesn't just mean they move around a lot more, it also means bigger swings. You know, 17 rand to the dollar would probably not be the worst ever. We might go 18, 19 rand to the dollar, and that's, you know, well into the 20s for the pound. These are the problems you face in terms of credit rating downgrades.
Of course, monetary policy is not the only policy game in town, and many have been advocating for those structural reforms, you included. Just remind the listeners of what some of those reforms should be that you feel would put South Africa in a better position to win economically.
Well, look, I mean, you know, a lot of them have been very well encapsulated in National Treasury's growth plan. And the sooner we implement that, the better. And, of course, you know, the war cry for South Africa is implement, implement, implement. And, of course, you know, these reforms, not just fixing, you know, productive capacity of electricity and indeed water as well, something we haven't talked about, you know, water scarcity as well in South Africa. But obviously looking at other areas, you know, bringing in, you know, fast spectrum for our data usage, and always seen as a really good one. Changes happening to the travel visas, you know, that's been announced. I think at Busa recently, the president and said, you know, allowing skilled workers into the country, that's something they're going to increasingly allow as well. All of these are part of structural changes and reforms. If you have a look at shopping centres, for example, large anchor tenants, you know, getting very preferential rates, as they do to draw customers to the shopping centres. But obviously, you know, smaller businesses wanting to get a foot in there as well. And so many different reforms were mentioned in that report. And of course, you know, what you don't want to do is change things like the independence of the Reserve Bank. You know, sure, the nationalisation debate's actually different to independence, but, you know, a lot of issues and reforms in South Africa that have been lagging and haven't occurred need to occur. And one big one is, of course, you know, the Minerals and Petroleum Bill. We need to attract investment to extract our minerals and petroleum, not put such a high free carry and, you know, such high problems. The biggest reform for me is reducing red tape regulations in South Africa. You know, we've been advised to cut about at least 25%. We cannot take another year year where our ease of doing business just deteriorates further. Not because we didn't make things more difficult, because we did nothing to make it easier, compared to other countries that did a lot more to make it easier.
And the very last thing, what bells ring in your head when you see the finance minister tweeting about, you know, needing to speed up reform now and stuff like that? I mean, he could talk to his colleagues behind closed doors. Where does that come from, do you think? And what does that make you think as an economist?
Well, partly, I suppose, you know, having been used to him as a Reserve Bank governor, he does speak his mind. And we just are used to that. And, you know, a lot of people are not used to people speaking his mind. And I think he's been told recently by the ANC not to do so. But, you know, the bottom line is he is not wrong either. You know, the thing is about reforms is you don't make structural changes today and reap very strong economic growth tomorrow, as you obviously know. You know, structural reforms take years to come through. It's a process. And, yes, you know, an example is we're getting really good private sector fixed investment growth last year. That's not on an investment strike. People saying the private sector is on an investment strike is not true. We had 16% growth in the second quarter, 11% in the third quarter, and about positive growth in the first quarter. So, you know, that's something that's going to feed through into stronger growth this year and next year. And that's the lag that it takes. So structural reforms will then start to boost private sector fixed investment further, which will in turn will eventually have a longer term impact on growth. It can take 2-3 years for it to feed through. So that is why we need to be quick about it.
Annabel, lovely having you in studio. That was Annabel Bishop. She's chief economist at Investec.